Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Articles of Confederation is the founding framework that governed the United States during the Revolutionary Era and the uncertain years immediately after independence. Produced under the authority of the Second Continental Congress, it reflects both the urgency of uniting the former colonies and the deep fear of centralized power shaped by experiences with British rule. The document created a League of Friendship among states, established a national Congress, and set rules for diplomacy, war, western lands, and intergovernmental cooperation. At the same time, it deliberately limited federal authority, leaving most power with the states and giving the national government few reliable tools to raise revenue or enforce national policies. Studying the articles offers a clear view of early American priorities, compromises, and political anxieties. It also provides essential context for why the later Constitutional Convention occurred and why the Constitution took a different approach to federal power, representation, and executive authority. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, a union built on state sovereignty. A central theme of the Articles of Confederation is the decision to preserve state sovereignty as the default setting of American government. The states entered into a League of Friendship rather than forming a consolidated nation, and the national structure was designed to be cautious, limited, and dependent on state cooperation. This design reflects the political reality of the period. Separate colonies had become separate states with their own legislatures, militias, and economic interests, and many leaders viewed concentrated authority as a threat to liberty. The articles therefore emphasize that powers not expressly delegated remain with the states, shaping a system where the national level acts primarily as a coordinator. This arrangement clarifies why congressional actions often required consensus, and why national policy could be slowed by divergent state priorities. I think it also highlights how early Americans defined independence not only as separation from Britain, but as protection against any distant government that might resemble imperial control. Understanding this emphasis helps readers see how the United States experimented with union before embracing a stronger federal structure under the Constitution. Secondly, Congress as the sole national institution, under the Articles, the national government is centered on a single-body Congress. There is no separate executive branch to carry out laws, and no national judiciary to interpret them uniformly across the states. Congress manages war and peace, diplomacy, treaties, and relations with native peoples within certain limits, and it serves as the forum where states negotiate shared concerns. Representation is organized by states rather than by population, with each state delegation casting one vote, which reinforces the idea that states are the primary political units. This structure reveals both strengths and weaknesses. On one hand, Congress could present a unified face abroad and coordinate wartime strategy, creating a sense of national purpose. On the other hand, implementing decisions relied heavily on state compliance, committees, and temporary administrative arrangements. The design shows what early American leaders considered safer than a strong executive, yet it also illuminates practical problems of accountability and follow-through. Readers can trace how this one-branch system influenced later debates about separation of powers, checks and balances, and the need for stable administration. Thirdly, finance and the limits of national power. The Articles of Confederation are often remembered for a fundamental constraint. Congress could request funds from the states, but lacked the direct power to levy taxes on individuals. This financial design demonstrates the era's suspicion of centralized revenue collection, but it also exposes why the national government struggled to pay debts, fund the military, and meet diplomatic obligations. Because contributions depended on state legislatures, national budgeting became uncertain and politically contentious. The document also limited Congress's ability to regulate commerce, leaving states with wide latitude over trade policy, tariffs, and currency-related decisions. The resulting patchwork could create friction among states, complicate foreign trade negotiations, and weaken national bargaining power. This topic matters because it connects constitutional design to everyday governance. Armies require pay, treaties require credibility, and public credit requires reliable revenue. By examining these limits, readers can better understand why calls grew for reform and why later proposals emphasized federal taxation authority and national control over interstate and foreign commerce. The articles therefore serve as a practical case study in how institutional choices shape economic stability and national capacity. Fourthly, decision-making, amendments, and the problem of unanimity. Another important aspect of the articles is the demanding threshold for major national decisions, especially amendments. Many significant actions required supermajorities, and changing the articles required unanimous consent of the states. These rules were meant to protect state autonomy and prevent rapid shifts in national authority, but they also made adaptation difficult in a fast-changing political environment. The unanimity requirement meant that a single state could block reforms that others considered urgent, encouraging stalemate when interests diverged. This framework helps explain why the confederation system could persist even as dissatisfaction grew. The legal path to improve it was extremely narrow. Readers can see how procedural rules influence not only outcomes but also political behavior, pushing leaders toward informal workarounds or toward calls for an entirely new framework. In later American constitutional development, the move away from unanimity toward a more achievable amendment process reflects lessons learned during this period. Studying the articles in this light reveals a deeper point: the stability of a governing system depends not only on its principles, but on how it allows change when circumstances and public needs evolve. Lastly, Western lands, interstate cooperation, and a growing national identity, despite its limitations. The articles helped establish habits of cooperation that contributed to a developing national identity. The document outlines ways states should work together, including principles related to mutual defense, shared interests, and recognition of certain rights and privileges when citizens travel among states. It also provides a framework for handling Western lands and the admission of new states, an issue that carried enormous long-term importance as the nation expanded beyond the original seaboard states. Managing territory raised questions about who would control land claims, how new communities would be governed, and how the Union would grow without becoming a collection of rival regions. The articles reflect early attempts to balance state claims with collective national goals, even when enforcement mechanisms were weak. This topic helps readers appreciate that the Confederation period was not simply a failure, but an experimental phase in nation building. It laid groundwork for later policies and for the idea that the United States could expand through legal processes rather than conquest among its own members. Understanding these cooperative elements provides a more balanced view of what the articles achieved. In conclusion, this book is best for readers who want to understand the roots of American government, including students in civics, U.S. history enthusiasts, debate and model Congress participants, and anyone trying to make sense of why the Constitution was drafted the way it was. The Articles of Confederation can benefit a reader's life by sharpening how they think about institutional design, what happens when authority is decentralized, how incentives shape cooperation, and why procedures for funding, enforcement, and amendment matter as much as ideals. It also encourages a realistic view of nation building, showing that the United States did not begin with a polished system, but with a cautious compromise built under pressure. Compared with many secondary overviews, buying this primary document offers direct contact with the structure and language of the era without filtering everything through modern interpretation. That makes it valuable as a reference, a teaching tool, and a foundation for comparing the Confederation model with the later Constitution. If you want a concise, historically significant text that anchors bigger discussions about federalism and governance, it is a worthwhile purchase. If you would like to support Second Continental Congress, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.